Good morning, Stephen. How are things?
Good morning. They're well. I was very happy to hear those birds chirping away. That was very nice.
Now you're close proximity-wise. Do you have any birds chirping near you?
No. They're all kind of shivering out there right now, I think.
Oh.
I don't know what's going on, but yeah, it's just not as it's not as alive here where I am for some reason. I'm not far, I'm a little bit north, like a half an hour north, so
Well, we can't
maybe that
all
makes
be
all
in
the difference.
Buffalo, right? That's the thing. We can't
We
all
can't all
enjoy.
be in Buffalo. You're right. Yeah, that's correct.
Are you chirping buffalo, Stephen? Oh dear.
I love Buffalo. I'm a big Buffalo guy. No, I would never do that, Rhett. I'm a Buffalo fan. And you grew up where I grew up. We spent a lot of time thinking about Buffalo, so I like Buffalo.
It's amazing, actually. Everyone that comes to Buffalo loves Buffalo.
Yep.
Nobody really wants to stay in Buffalo.
Good town. No, it's a good town, man.
What makes it a good town?
The
Ah,
people.
it's yeah, they're good, nice folks mostly. Some of them are less nice. If if you're out tailgating at a build back when you could do that, sometimes you want to watch your step. But that's yeah, a game at that, a Bills game is an interesting cultural and sociological experience in all ways. But yeah, no, they're good folks. It's a nice town. It's got a kind of cool little downtown. It's got lovely architecture and good restaurants and lots of cool bars, and yeah, I like everything about it. It's on the lake. It's near Niagara Falls. I like all kinds of good things.
Maid of the Mist retro. Have you taken the kids out to the Maid of the Mist?
Didn't do the Maid of the Mist. Still might. Still considering.
Like,
Still considering.
you've been there for a month, and it sounds like you've done nothing. Is that fair?
Well,
Like, 'cause it's like, I'm gonna
no.
go do this, I'm gonna go do that. We saw one night you went out for wings, and other than that,
Oh, you got just hammered watching the Bills lose. That's what it was. Yeah.
We did the jet boat tour, boys. Didn't I tell you about the jet boat tour?
No, you
No.
Jet boat tour was cool. Yes. It's in the Niagara River, which is just down from the falls. Very harsh waters. They got the big jet boats, splashing into the big waves. Awesome. Awesome. Cold water, though.
Yeah, it does sound great. Yeah, it does sound
You don't
good.
want to fall out there.
No,
You
you
don't want
don't.
to fall.
Now, Stephen, you'll be able to lend some expertise here. David Brayley passing away
Yes.
yesterday, and just league-wide, even just dignitaries, whether they people are within politics, within sport. Pouring in the accolades, the life and the accomplishments of David Brayley, who, by all accounts, I did not meet him, but by all accounts, just a wonderful guy and who championed the CFL at times when no one else, or at least not many else, would.
Yes, that's all true. To a point. I'm not here to speak ill of the dead, but I will speak honestly of the dead. Okay, is that all right?
Fair
Like
enough.
I think
Yeah,
a little
please.
balance, because I've been reading a lot of tributes to David this morning and heard a lot of them yesterday. Look, if it were not for David Brayley, the CFL wouldn't exist right now. Now it just sort of exists at the moment. It's kind of hanging by a thread at the moment, but it's absolutely true that if he had not put his own money into Hamilton, Toronto and and BC at various times, some of them overlapping, some of them two at once. There wasn't anybody else out there willing to do it, and those teams, all or some of those teams would have gone under, and the league probably would have gone under. So that part is true. Now, I think it's worth considering whether those teams were better when at after his stewardship than they were before. Like, some of them were on death's doorstep, absolutely, but he kind of ran teams into the ground too, and that's because he didn't spend any money on marketing, and he didn't spend any money on the kind of modern machineries of ticket selling. He didn't care about that stuff, and he liked hosting Grey Cups. He hosted, at one point not that long ago, four Grey Cups in 6 years between two of his teams. Grey Cups are very lucrative. So this isn't a charity we're talking about here. He did find a way to make it a cash positive experience in a lot of ways, I think. And he wielded a ton of power in the league because he was the richest guy in the league. He liked to tell people he was the richest guy in the league. He liked to kind of throw his weight around. And I think in a lot of ways he kind of held the league back. Now, you know, that implies that there are other people who had progressive ideas and the resources to carry them out. And so a lot of the time that wasn't true. But, you know, he was not a progressive force in the league. And I think, you know, there was a sense that he, you know, he liked wielding the power he did in this little tiny world. Like he's like David, David's office is about 5 minutes from my house here in Hamilton, literally. Like I go walk to it, Orlick Industries, which is the most, you know, unimpressive building you've ever seen. It betrays nothing about the amount of money he made in the auto parts business and then in real estate. You know, he had a $10 haircut and he walked around in a beat up old windbreaker. And, you know, he liked to be able to walk out on the factory floor and be one of the guys with his employees. But the flip side of him was that, you know, if you got him behind closed doors in a boardroom, he was the first guy to tell you how much money he had, you know, including the fact, apparently, you know, and again, maybe the story is apocryphal, but with other CFL governors, literally showing them his bank book, you know, back in the days when people had bank books and saying, that's how much I'm worth. Mm. So, you know, there's a famous story, and this one I know is true, when Paul Tagliabue, the then NFL commissioner, came up here to meet the CFL governors about, you know, probably the CFL guys were borrowing money, it would be my guess. And, you know, Braley was resplendent in his windbreaker and, you know, not looking like, you know, Diamond Jim Brady. And he kind of leaned back and is, you know, said to Paul Tagliabue, I would like you to know, Mr. Tagliabue, that I'm a man of considerable wealth. He put that on the table all the time. And so, yeah, he saved teams. And yes, he is better known for his work in the CFL than he is for getting rich in the auto parts business. He put his name on a lot of stuff in Hamilton. He gave a lot of money, you know, to McMaster University, to the hospitals here. David Braley's name is all over this town. And, you know, obviously that kind of philanthropy is appreciated in the community. It matters. But the reason we're talking about him today is the CFL. And that's the only, you know, other outside of Hamilton, no one would know his name except for the CFL. And I think, again, he kind of reveled in being the big frog in that very small pond, throwing his weight around and not always in the greater interests of the league. You know, he was briefly the interim commissioner. He was the interim commissioner, not that briefly. You know, he famously made sure that, you know, he got his name on the football during that time. Was, you know, cared about stuff like that. You know, there was, he created a bunch of drama around the hiring of Tom Wright as commissioner, had him, you know, at a Grey Cup where, you know, canceled a press conference, had Tom Wright locked away in a room somewhere, kind of tried to turn it into some kind of intrigue. You know, at one point he secretly was underwriting the owners of the Toronto Argonauts, Howard Sokolowski and David Sinnemann. You know, the only people who knew that David Braley was actually paying the bills. And remember, he owned BC as well. That's 2-8 teams. It's, you know, mm-hmm. Not a lot of leagues would let you do that. But the only people who knew he was actually paying the bills were the Argo owners, him, and the commissioner. No one, like the other governors, didn't know he was doing it. So, you know, so, and look, the, you know, the Argos that he sold to Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment were absolutely dead in the water. You know, the Hamilton Tiger Cats that he handed over to community ownership were on their way to bankruptcy. And the BC Lions, you know, and, you know, he held them for a long time. But, you know, during the early years of his tenure when Bobby Ackles was alive and did a lot of outreach in the community, was a very well-respected football guy and community guy, they thrived. But talk to anybody in Vancouver now about where the Vancouver Lions, the BC Lions, are in the local landscape. And they're, you know, they're fourth, you know. They're third. There's put it this way, they're third. There's not four teams there, I guess, unless you add the Seattle Seahawks in, which mm-hmm. you probably should. But they are, you know, way behind the Canucks. They're behind the Whitecaps. And their audience is, you know, old and, you know, old traditional CFL fans. It's the Remember When crowd. They've kind of lost the conversation in Vancouver. And, you know, and in part that's because, you know, you didn't invest the money and put money into the kind of things that keep a team out front and center and market the stars and market the product. You know, he wanted to keep the TV blackout going. And he fought for it. So, yeah, he's the savior, and I'm reading all this stuff today, and that part is, like, that's unequivocally true. Without his money, there's no league. So maybe it's a moot point, you know, criticizing around the edges and saying, but this. But the truth is, yeah, he saved the league, but on other levels, he did not help the league at all.
But, you know what, and because that was kind of my understanding, and I can't have an opinion on it because I don't know enough about it. I've never met him. I've not had deep conversations. I don't have a lot of insight into what's happened in Toronto and Hamilton and BC. But that was kind of my understanding, that was that while he is obviously he loves the league, but not everything was it wasn't all good, I guess, when it came to David Brayley and his dealings with the Canadian Football League.
No, I think, okay, and again, I shouldn't complain about the guy looking after his own, looking out for himself and looking out for his own, but look at that, again, consider the Grey Cup, which is the only thing in the CFL that consistently makes money, they held the Centennial Grey Cup in Toronto, and they got the federal government, now David was a senator at that point, but they got the federal government to underwrite the 100th Grey Cup as kind of a cultural event in Toronto, and then they staged a Grey Cup that looked like every other Grey Cup, but the government of Canada underwrote it, and the profits went to the Toronto Argonauts, to David Brayley. But, four Grey Cups in 6 years, you could afford a lot of operating losses if you had four Grey Cups in 6 years. Mm-hmm. So, he was obviously wealthy enough he could withstand the losses from the CFL, but I think he mitigated them pretty well. that's just being smart. But this notion, and I know, it is what happens, when somebody's gone, that it's all kind of, and look, I guess one thing is I'm kind of resisting casting him either as a hero or a villain, because, pretty much everybody is somewhere in between, and, he wasn't 100% a hero, and he wasn't 100% a villain, yeah, in terms of the CFL. I'm not speaking about him in any other aspect of his life. But as significant a figure as there has been in the CFL in the last 30 years, but not all of that is good.
Anything new on the CFL front before we move on to something different?
Well, just there are doubts about what they're going to, how they're going to play in 2021.
Yeah.
That's, I know we never speak about the competition, but Dave Naylor's a great pal of mine. We worked together at the Globe and Mail for a long time, and he obviously covers the league for the other guys, the Three Letter Network, and he wrote a piece about the league potentially being mothballed in 2021 that got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So there's no easy way forward here, and I think there's disagreement within the league about whether, they want to play without fans, with limited fans. How are you going to start a season where it's a guarantee? You're guaranteed to lose money. What do the publicly owned teams do with that? Would the government of Saskatchewan or the government of Manitoba, or potentially the government of Alberta with the Eskimos, would they underwrite the publicly owned teams? In that scenario, they probably would in Saskatchewan. How do the private owners feel about that, where no one's going to underwrite them and it would just be their money? So, and it's clear as mud, right? The next 6 months, I think we'd all like to think that it's going to be kind of business as usual by June, but you really think so?
No.
yeah, no, I don't no. either. So I think they're in a real spot right now because they can't really plan, and it's easy to say, well, just go play without fans or play with limited fans, because look, everybody else is doing that. Look at the NFL; they're playing with limited fans or no fans. The NBA is going to start at Christmas, it looks, with no fans. They're going to just push right through. The NHL is going to start probably in January with no fans. They're going to push through. Major League Soccer is playing with limited or no fans. They've got a crappy TV contract. They're going to push through. But, you need the stakeholders in the league, the nine stakeholders, to be willing to take the hit. And their TV money's not going up. It is what it is. So, they're in a bind. And the, I'm not sure. Are we going to know any better in March than we know now in heading into November? I think it's we're all guessing, right?
Yeah.
So they're in a spot right now. But if you miss 2 years, which is not completely outside the question, how do you come back? What do you come back as? So,
and Patrick,
a lot of stuff.
And yeah. Patrick Mahomes isn't lobbying for them to go play in Missouri either, like he is the Raptors.
No, he's not. No, you're correct about that.
What do you make of? Are there any? Because all of a sudden you get Patrick Mahomes, who has a lot of money and some sway in that part of the world. He's part of the Royals ownership. All of a sudden, he, albeit briefly, but put on Twitter, "Hey, Raptors can't play home. Come play here." We got a building.
Well, they're going to play somewhere that's not Toronto, it would appear.
Yeah.
Like, there's a, you know, that, like, that, that is, I think, one of the more interesting things that's happened in the last couple of weeks is that the NBA have, you know, because, look, because we all talked about when those leagues wrapped up their seasons, the NHL and the NBA, well, are they going to, they're going to try and hold out until they can get some fans in the arenas. Clearly, the NBA has decided that's not happening. You know, we're not going to, we can't hold out. We're not going to hold out. We would rather play on TV at Christmas, and we're just going to push right on through. So that, you know, kind of leaves the NHL to figure out what they're going to do. You know, get ready for the All-Canadian Division, which, you know, I think would actually be a great thing. But, yeah, the Raptors are going to have to find a home. I don't, like, you know, are the Raptors going to get special dispensation from the federal government to go back and forth across the border and have visiting teams go back and forth across the border? Like again, I think you can make the case that it's not a massive public health risk for that to happen. But all indications are they're not going to get special status, so... Yeah, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City. You know, they said they wouldn't. You know, they talked about Louisville, but the players don't want to play in Louisville because of Breonna Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I. But look, I, one of the surest bets right now, it would appear, is that the NBA will be back on the floor in time to play games on television at Christmas with no fans. So that's going to be a pretty short off season. You know, they haven't even had their draft yet.
I don't know how much you guys out east have paid attention to it or how much it's being talked about, but Alberta and the federal government partnering with a pilot project to replace the 14-day quarantine coming into the country from international travelers, voluntary rapid testing. Essentially, you produce a negative when you cross the border. You quarantine for 2 days, have to do another test 6 days later. I mean, is this a pathway in your mind, or is this just... a dart in the dark at trying to make this a little easier? And what could that mean for other leagues and sports and travel? And could the Raptors bring teams in for a doubleheader each this year, but they have to hang in Toronto for 5 days ahead of time?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, again, all things are on the table, right? And yeah, I have been, look, I've been selfishly following that because I'm thinking that might allow me to go fishing somewhere this winter.
Sure.
And get the hell out of winter for a little bit. I think the idea is to make people comfortable, give people an option to travel again so that the airlines don't all go under. So yeah, but it would open a window for professional sports for sure. I guess you could kind of half quarantine the teams in their hotels or at least have them, you know, they'd have to play by the whatever the local rules were in terms of, you know, hotels, restaurants, you know, being out in public, whatever you would be able to do. But that, yeah, I think that's the next stage in not just in sports but in our lives, which is stuff that will mitigate this, you know, not eliminate it. It's not the pandemic being over, but various ways for us to kind of ease back into a more normal life and work, you know, kind of workarounds. And yeah, I would think that they're going to look at that. They would take advantage of that if it was allowed. You know, I also think, you know, and maybe even more significantly as we get further down the road, you know, could you make that work for baseball at the end of March, April with the Blue Jays? You know, would you be able to have a team come in on a road trip and do that? And can you make the baseball schedule work that way? I guess, the best argument sports has right now is that by and large, you know, they made all of their various pandemic scenarios work. You know, the bubble scenarios worked for the NHL and the NBA. You know, baseball's had some glitches. The NFL has had some glitches without a bubble. So did MLS, but they seem to have managed to pull everything under control. So, you know, I guess, you know, the worst case scenario, which, you know, look, how many people said it's all coming down like a house of cards back in the summer? It's all going to come down. It's all going to end. They're not going to finish. Well, you know, we're a game or two games away from the World Series being finished. The NHL Stanley Cup's awarded. The Larry O'Brien Trophy's been awarded. You know, MLS is playing out its season. That's their best argument right now, is that, you know, that they did it and the world didn't come to an end, and they didn't endanger the community. And, you know, maybe that's a pretty good argument, I think.
Well, and I would just, the final thought for me on this, if you are like Brunt of Brunt Industries and you're some, you know, massive businessman in the States that has interest in Canada, you can come and go. There's flights all day landing at Toronto's airport for people to come in and do business. That is the agreement. There's no vacation or leisure travel, but if it's business related, how in the world are, when we look at the number of testings and how stringent the environment these athletes are living in, why does the federal government or the people that make these decisions think that these are the high-risk people, not the people that are traveling, walking through airports that haven't been tested every day, that aren't in controlled environments as much as pro athletes? Like, the more time we get from July when, okay, the Blue Jays got shut down, or June, whenever it was, till now, the more you realize if you're going to let anyone in the country – baseball teams on a private jet getting tested every year are probably the safest people to bring into the country.
You know, and I would have argued that, and, you know, I did sort of argue that, you know, back in the summer. But, you make – it's a great point, and it's not made enough. And, again, I'm not just saying this because we're in the sports business. I'm just saying, like, a lot of this stuff is arbitrary. You know, it's not – you'd say, well, the border's closed. No, the border's not actually closed. It's closed to a lot of people. But as you say, it's not closed. There are people coming, hundreds, if you know, thousands of people coming across, back and forth across that border every day. And because they are deemed to be essential, or their business is deemed to be essential. And, you know, I can get on a plane tomorrow and go to Florida if I want to, and come home, and, you know, then have to, I would have to follow the rules. But I think the answer to why sports was treated differently, or has been treated differently, is it's one word, it's optics. You know, I think it is. I think it's this is not, you know, this is sports. It's pretend. It's not an essential service. People are having to limit their own lives in a lot of different ways, you know, kind of suck it up and play by the rules. And how are we going to let these guys have privileges that we don't have? And as you say, you know, all of those other people, the anonymous, the guys who cross the border anonymously every day, we're not thinking about that too much. So, like, I think the decision by the feds, you know, when it came to the Jays, and again, I think the Jays understood, they made it work, they made the Buffalo thing work, but I honestly think it was optics. I think it was politics. I think it was a message being sent to the public, and, you know, maybe that's the right message, which is, we've all got to play by the rules. That is the message, you know, that's an important message, but it might not be entirely fair.
Now, before we let you go, we had talked on Friday about something that you had on the cooker. I would like some details as to what you have going as far as your next potential big interview.
Well, and again, I almost hate to, you know, potentially curse this, because I know, you know, things don't, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes don't go as planned, and we are, of course, in Zoom world, and, you know, it's
don't
not,
jinx it.
But no,
so is that what? It would be Zoom.
Everything's Zoom. Yeah. Well, or a double ender anyway. Let's put it Zoom. It'll be a double ender, which means it won't look like Zoom. It'll be someone talking into a TV camera somewhere and me talking to a TV camera.
Right.
So that's better than Zoom. But not face, not mano a mano. So should I jinx it or what?
When are you slated to do it?
Thursday. So we could talk about it Friday.
Let's talk about it Friday.
That works.
Okay, I feel better about that.
Okay.
I feel better. I just, because, you know, that'll be much better.
Now, can we tease it in that... Of the people, now you've never interviewed this athlete, correct?
Oh yeah, no, I have.
You have.
Four or five times over, you know, how many years?
Right.
25, 30 years? Yeah.
But is he a good interview? I don't know, because if it happens, I need to see it. I know that. But I don't know if he's that good of an interview.
He's many different people. depends on the day, my friend.
All right.
So he's been great, and he's been less great, and we'll see. I honestly have no idea.
Very good. We'll talk about it Friday. Good luck.
Thank you.
See ya.
See you guys.